We're about to begin another edition of Ag Matters. I have in the studio, of course, Amy Pettit. Welcome, Amy.
Good, very cold morning, Mike. It was about 20 below up Lazy Mountain this morning. Chilly.
Chilly up there, chilly down here.
Yeah.
Well, I came back this weekend. I had the great pleasure to be up there and Fairbanks, not only in Fairbanks, but Chena Hot Springs, looking at things growing green and nice up there, you know.
Oh, yeah.
In the greenhouse,
yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
But a report to this morning was minus 41 in Fairbanks.
Yikes. And, well, I hope everyone stays safe and warm. On our discussion this morning on Ag Matters, I'm going to start with a question for you.
Okay.
There is a celebratory week happening in Alaska this week. Do you know what it is?
Specific to Alaska.
Mm-hmm. It's culminating with a big festival in Anchorage this weekend. It's Alaska Beer Week.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh.
Well,
how could you have missed it?
How could I have missed the idea? Well, that's interesting.
Yeah. So it's Alaska Beer Week, and I don't know a ton about Alaska Beer Week, but our guest this morning does.
Okay.
And here any minute, I think the phone's going to ring, and Stephen from Arco's Brewery is going to be joining us for a discussion about the different local foods and products that they use in their beers and what's going on for Alaska Beer Week.
Okay. We'll look forward to that in particular because Stephen has graced this studio a number of times.
Oh, good.
We have done some good discussions about the history and cultural uses of beer, et cetera. As we welcome his voice coming in, and I know he'll be very knowledgeable about what's happening right now. What I can tell you, though, is that I have a question while we're waiting.
Okay.
I know we've touched upon this in the past, but I've understood that what happens in winter doesn't stay in winter, and in the sense that depending upon the kind of winter we have, the growing season dramatically alters in the summer.
It's true. Yeah.
What are we shaping up to right now? We're halfway through. We finally got some snow cover, but we're getting some pretty low temperatures as well.
Yeah.
Going together.
So it's very dependent on what our farmer in particular is growing. I think a couple of weeks ago when we had Mike from Eaglesong Peonies join us, the peony growers really, really, really need this snow. They don't mind the cold temperatures, and in fact, they need the cold temperatures for the peony root to go to sleep properly.
Right.
But without the insulation of the snow cover, it can kill the roots, right?
Sure.
Deep freeze them.
I've got that. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but then if you're a vegetable producer, like many here in the valley, this winter stuff doesn't really matter until March-ish, and we see what starts happening then in terms of the snow melting off and either the water saturating into the ground or running off, et cetera, and how quickly the farmers can get into the fields. If you're a livestock producer, this weather right now sucks, right? I mean, they're not loving it at all.
Right, right.
They still have to get out there and feed and water and protect their animals from this miserable cold.
What about things like hay production?
So also if you're a hay producer, you're thankful for the snowfall to protect the soil throughout the winter, to keep it covered up, and then to have that extra bit of moisture in the spring before the rain starts coming, when the snow starts to melt and go down into the soil. That's a good thing.
Okay.
That's a good thing. Yep.
Okay.
What else? So we've covered kind of the major.
Right. Because when we talk about most of the produce, that's all the greens and even carrots and so on, that's all planted fresh each year.
That's right. It's all planted in the spring. And so most of them are actually starting a lot of those products in greenhouses. If you're at the commercial scale, you're likely starting your seeds in a greenhouse and then transplanting baby plants into the ground in May.
And it's all that, you know, I haven't been out to watch the process, but maybe that's a reminder of this isn't How to what degree is it automated? I mean, you're taking little plants.
Yeah.
You're going out and putting them, and then in the next one, and the next one, and so on.
I think that most of our producers' goal is to be very automated, just for efficiency, and for timeliness, and for keep your labor costs down. Not that many of our producers are automated yet.
Okay.
You can catch some great videos of planting on the Vanderweel Farm Facebook page.
Oh, okay.
Or if you go onto YouTube and Google Alaska grown vegetables, Stephen Nowers has done some incredible footage for the Farm Bureau chapter here in the Mat-Su, and he's captured some of the guys that have the mechanization. Even if they have the mechanization, the transplanter where they drop the little baby plants in and it spins around and tucks it in the ground, they still have to have a person walking behind and tucking that plant in just right, you know, and making sure it's perfect.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. And I would guess, you know, that's a that's still a lot less work than doing the whole thing yourself.
Oh my gosh! Yeah, back-breaking work.
So being up there, and I can give a brief report, first of all, to encourage people to consider the possibility of, especially in the depths of winter, to go up to Chena Hot Springs, because there's something about those hot springs that is very, very nice.
This is kind of the best time of year to go enjoy it, right? Oh, I've heard of people going there in the summer, and I kind of think, why would you go to the hot springs in summer? Go in the winter.
But now, I mean, the soaking is one thing. But then their greenhouses up there, they plant in rock wool, of course. And they're using a soilless environment in order to grow. Primarily, they grow salad greens and tomatoes.
Right.
But they also have indeterminate tomato plants. So they were just finishing up and going, because they don't go forever and ever.
Right.
But they have 50-foot long vines that are producing. And we had some of the lettuce, and certainly this is fresh lettuce, just been picked. And so
delicious,
on.
Right?
So they're able, because they have the major ingredient, which is energy.
Right.
And energy that and heat, essentially, the energy for a good part of their power requirements, it is produced because they're off the grid, and they have a little bit of generator backup at times.
Yeah.
But every time I go up, I'm reminded of the evolution of this operation. It's not a static thing. And like many people that are doing farming in any area, you know, looking at the conditions, change circumstances, expansion, whatever you're doing, checking out a new particular seed or et cetera.
Right.
But it's still somewhat impressive to maybe go through 20 below zero weather, drive this distance, then you appear at this oasis with the glow of the greenhouses and the steam rising from the water.
Is the ice museum functioning this time of year?
Oh, it functions year-round.
Okay.
And that's a tribute as well, because, and this will grab people's, I think, attention. As we were there, we were bundled up for what was minus 25 when we were there. And as we got ready to step into the ice house, of course, the question was, what's it going to be like in there? And it was pointed out, we'll get ready to open up your coat because
it
will be 50 degrees warmer.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Because the ambient temperature inside the ice house is kept at 25.
Right.
So you're going from minus 25 to plus 25.
Yep.
And it was noticeably, it's hard to, I mean, you're stepping into, you've been there, other people, this wonderful, wonderful interior with all kinds of beautiful ice sculpture, et cetera, that's obviously frozen.
Yep.
But you've just been in a place, it was 50 degrees colder.
Right.
And it's the same couple working away there. They've been doing that for many years. And they work on, they start at one end, basically picking out some priorities. They have to continually be working because what's happening in the interior is sublimation. And sublimation that ice turns into gas and is away. There's no water collecting anywhere.
Right.
But all of the intricate work that's been done in ice begins to require fixing. So they have a year-round job doing this. It operates year-round, summer, winter, and it is still as wonderful. We brought a couple of people who had never been up there to see it, and they were astounded. It was just and if you're looking for a little bit of a different evening, you can sleep in the ice house.
Right. No, thanks.
They have four different rooms.
Yep.
Well, you're not sleeping on ice. You would be, in fact, that's the point. Whether it's a stool that you're going to sit in on or something to lay on, there is might be a caribou hide or something that's down, so you're not right on the ice.
And stuff in there.
But and they also do a number of weddings each year.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, all of that.
The first
happening.
Time I went there, it was in the middle of summer, and so it was 80 some degrees outside. I think it was in July, and my husband and our first daughter were there with us, and she was just an infant. And I remember they wouldn't let us take the baby in to the ice museum because they thought that the swing in temperature from, 86 down to 25 would be too much for her,
Right.
So, yeah. Yeah. I'm not sure where our guest is. Perhaps the cold weather got to him this morning. I don't know.
Whoops. Keep talking here and I'll be right back.
Okay. The other thing... you joked when you mentioned the ice museum and this huge space that's actually so much warmer than it is outside at 25 below. Many of our farmers, when they refer to their big cooling systems, they call them their warmers instead of their coolers, because for more part of the year, those coolers are actually keeping product warmer than outside. So that's kind of a funny joke in the industry. But anyway... back.
So we're about to hear the phone ring. And
oh, good.
That will be Stephen.
Okay, very good.
Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning. How are you?
Hi, Stephen.
Hi, Amy.
Thanks for joining us this morning.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
Yeah.
We've been talking a little bit about Chena Hot Springs because I've been there, and we're ready to turn our attention to this special week, because I understand you have a lot of information about it.
Absolutely. This is Alaska Beer Week, a.k.a. Beer Week.
Yeah.
This has actually been going on for 6 years now.
Oh, okay.
And the Brewers Guild of Alaska, of which almost all the breweries in the state are members of, are doing all we can to promote it. And so the culmination is, of course, the Great Alaska Beer and Barley Wine Festival that happens this weekend, this Friday and Saturday at the Egan Center.
Yeah.
And unbeknownst to many, it's actually not only a big deal in the state, but it's somewhat tourist-oriented. People actually come up from the lower 48.
Oh, really?
To attend. But the entire week, throughout this whole week, there are beer dinners and beer releases and all kinds of different events that all the breweries and throughout the entire state
participate in
and promote, and educational things about beer and what goes into beer and ingredients and a whole slew of things. So. Any brewery's website promotes that, or the BGA, the Brewers Guild of Alaska Guild website promotes that as well.
Very good. Well, that's why I wanted to have you on, is because I saw that it was Alaska Beer Week, and so I thought, well, let's talk to one of our Palmer brewers, the one that's been here the longest and puts a lot of effort into it. And, this radio program is called Ag Matters, but I know you guys have used local products in the past, and you're a big part of our local community. So let's start there. Let's start with Arcos and just a little bit of history about you guys.
Well, this is our sixth year now that we've been brewing. We actually, when we first started, we just provided growler fills at the brewery.
I remember.
but of course, now most of our beer is actually kegged and bottled. Most of our beer is bottled and distributed, the 22-ounce bottles.
Yeah.
And so you can find them everywhere. Well, not everywhere, but in every region of the state, let's put it that way. Cars, Three Bears, Knick Country Liquor, Fred Meyer, Oak and Keg, any place you can find craft beer, you can find our 22-ounce bottles. And so now that's sort of where we've grown into now.
Yeah.
And we do actually try to source as many local ingredients as we can. It's a little challenging at times. Brewing barley is a very specific grain. Of course, it's one of the main four ingredients in beer: barley, hops, water, and yeast. And so the grain, brewing barley, is very, very specific, very different from feed barley, which is grown in Alaska.
Right.
From what I understand, in Delta Junction.
A lot of it.
A lot of it. Although no one grows brewing barley per se on a commercial scale. There may be some home brewers that grow it for their own personal use.
Yeah, and there's been a couple of farmers trying to experiment with some of the brewing barley too. Have you been in touch with any of them, or have they been in touch with you?
I have spoken over the years with a few people, and so the reason why brewing barley is so unique, different from feed barley. Brewing barley is very very low in nitrogen, so low in protein.
Right.
And then very high in the starch content, whereas feed barley would be the opposite, so
right.
It's very high in protein. And so it takes a lot more acreage to be planted to get the same yield. So that's one reason why brewing barley is so expensive and so prized, because farmers or growers are paid a premium to take up all that land to grow it. And if just visually looking at it, a brewing barley grain compared to a feed barley grain is very plump. It's very large and plump. So actually visually, if you hold it in your hand, you could easily tell a brewing barley from a feed barley.
Okay.
As well as historically and still today, before it can be used in brewing, barley has to be malted.
Right.
So that's a whole other industry that... you need, absolutely. So the thing is, there's actually a trend, just like there's a trend, not a trend, but now we have microbreweries,
yep.
So small breweries. There's actually now a trend starting to develop, so micro-malting.
Oh, of course.
Craft maltings.
Is anyone doing that up here in Alaska?
Not in Alaska.
Okay.
Not in Alaska, but there is now, so historically brewing maltings are very large industrial enterprises, and we mean large.
Yeah.
So, but the equipment is available now.
Micro-malting,
as that becomes adopted, so more and more people will probably get into that. So if you don't know about malting, simply put, barley is steeped in water for a few days until it germinates, and then it's kilned.
Cooked.
So what that does is it releases, the starches are more readily released, it's partially broken down, so it can be milled, that grain can be milled very easily, and then through the brewing process, those sugars then more easily dissolve. So,
okay.
So maltings is a part of that too, which is a very exciting part of the craft brewing industry. Actually, it's a whole other kind of world. So that's pretty exciting. The micro maltings. I've been following it not too closely, but it's more and more getting attention of the news. So even if you're only like me, just kind of have sort of been following it, it's actually in very newsworthy now. So it's kind of everywhere if you follow the trends.
Sure. I bet. Is Oregon leading the charge in that? They seem to be.
Probably.
Yeah.
They're leading the charge in the micro maltings, but the main maltings in this country occur in the Midwest.
Okay.
So the big malting houses are located, obviously, where the brewing barley is grown.
Which is
the Midwest, into Canada there. So they're actually quite a few there as well, from what I understand. And there's actually some trade journals that are dedicated to micro maltings now, which is pretty exciting.
Well, that's
exciting.
Cool. There's an opportunity for an Alaskan to get more involved.
Absolutely. I would definitely incorporate as much as I could. And sometimes people ask me, well, why don't I get into it? Just like a brewery is an all-consuming enterprise,
yeah.
As is any business, maltings. Yep. That is an all-consuming enterprise. It would be something that you couldn't take lightly, because creating anything and creating beer, brewing beer, you want to take it seriously and focus on it 100%, if not more. Same thing with malting barley.
Yeah,
that's what you want to do if you want to do it.
Whenever we take tour groups to the local Havemeister Dairy, and of course, people's first question is, "When are you going to start making cheese?" And it's like, well. I'm not a cheesemaker, you know, I'm a dairyman,
sure.
And so it's kind of that same thing, right? Everyone
Very
wants you
so.
To do the next step. So what about hops? So that's the main ingredient, right? I know there are actually a few guys growing a little bit of Alaska-grown hops. Have you gotten your hands on any of that yet?
Not to a large extent. Actually, I haven't gotten my hands onto a lot of it. We have thought about incorporating a little bit from some growers that I know.
Yeah.
Basically, they're from what I talk to them, they're growing them personally just in their homes out back.
Yep.
But I haven't gotten my hands onto any either. The thing about those is really before you can use them in brewing, they actually have to go through a bit of a process as well.
Right.
So hops need to be harvested at the right time. And then they need to be dried. So typically that occurs in what's known as an oast house. Have you heard that?
Oast house?
O-A-S-T,
yeah.
Oast house. It's a large, well, you can do it anyway, but traditionally they're these large sort of dome-shaped structures that have a hole or a vent in top. And the hops, the cone hops, are harvested, and then they're placed on screens or drafty sort of shelves, and then heat from underneath, very low and slow, and even heat is applied. Historically, it was by wood-fired, but now we have more modern means, and then those are dried to bring way down the moisture, and then what happens is the hops are then, the woody particulates are separated from the hops, and they're pressed through dyes just mechanically, and then these pellets are created, and then those are what we use in the brewery. Now, you can use hops, just straight picked hops if you want. That's known as wet hopping. But it's a very challenging process to just use a wet hop, although the beer that's produced is one of a kind from wet hops. And that does occur to some degree, and we plan on doing that.
Oh, cool.
We plan on wet hopping a beer. If I can get my hands on enough of it.
How much is enough?
We would probably be looking at least 10 to 15 pounds.
Oh, I think that can be done. I know a guy, Stephen. I'm going to put you in touch with him.
I have been in touch with a guy that actually grows hops somewhere off the grid so that he can fly. He flies to his place.
Yep. It's the same guy I know.
Okay. He showed me some, and he grows it in a greenhouse?
Yep.
Yes. Maybe you showed me those pictures.
And I have actually been in the greenhouse.
Oh, okay.
Seen them growing. I can attest to the fact that they grow and they grow tall.
Yeah.
Well, let's do that. I mean, I don't know what else is he doing with his hops.
Nothing. He's experimenting with them. He's given them to a couple brewers that he knows. He's trying to see if it's viable or not. If it, you know, what different weather fluctuations and different sorts of summer, you know. Weather and water availability, you know, what does he have to make these hops produce? So he's just still playing around.
Sure. Well, I think the best way to find out if they're good or not is to just brew with them.
There you go. Yeah.
So, I mean, if they seem to be growing and look and feel and smell of good quality, I think they're ripe for putting into a brew. So,
awesome.
I mean, obviously hops are generally harvested in the fall. So that, but I mean, if he's growing in a greenhouse, that might be a whole different story.
Yeah.
Yeah. Please let's do that.
Okay. I'll see him next week. Yep. We, you know, this half hour goes by really fast and we only have a little bit of time left, Stephen. So I want to jump back into some of the specifics about Alaska Beer Week and whether Arcos is doing any special events or where can we taste some of your beers this week in a special way besides places that it's regularly available.
Well, we had actually, we did an event already happened at Hearth Artisan Pizza.
Oh, that's
the best.
This
is in Anchorage.
Yeah.
A great new place that popped up. We had a brewer's happy hour there. Like I say, just go to the BGA website. That's what we did.
Okay.
Tomorrow night at the brewery, we have our small batch, which is our Sriracha Stout.
Oh, yeah, your Thursday night.
Thursday night. So that's. We do actually do that every Thursday, but this is a special one that we brewed up for the beer week.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the Great Alaska Beer and Barley Wine Festival.
Yeah.
This weekend.
What time is tomorrow night's event, Stephen, at the brewery?
Tomorrow, you can be there at 5. That's when most people show up at 5.
Okay.
And we also have now the Faux Nora, food truck, actually permanently parked out in front of the brewery, so you can get lunch there if you want, starting at noon. And they'll be there on Thursdays till 7.
Very good.
And you can actually, a lot of people, what they do is, since it does get busy at times, text your order.
Oh.
and he'll have it ready for you. Noel'll have it ready for you.
Oh, the food order. I was going to say, wow.
The food order from the food truck.
Okay.
You know, you can text the brewery, too, if you want, and we'll have your growler ready for you.
Very good. Okay.
Yeah. But I encourage everyone not just at our coast, but all the brewers throughout the state are trying to participate more and more in Alaska Beer Week to promote it. Because, like I say, it's actually many people are not aware of that, but many people, as do June and I, when we travel, we incorporate breweries and brewery visits into our travels, and sometimes it's actually the main focus.
Sure.
And there's a whole tourism industry based on that, and there are many people that come to Alaska in the winter
just to drink beer.
A low tourist season, come to taste all the wonderful beers we have, and then participate in Beer Week, and of course, come to the Beer Week or the Great Alaska Beer and Barley Wine Festival in Anchorage.
That's outstanding.
Yeah.
What's the best way to find more information about our coast, Stephen? Is it on your website or Facebook, or what's the best way to connect with you guys?
Both. So our coast beer on Facebook. We have a website. Tuesday night tours at the brewery is a good time, so just come to the brewery. It's a very, very informative tour we give every Tuesday, so that's the best way to find out about our coast brewery and brewing in general. I find that if you enjoy beer and you like craft beer, the best way to really embrace that is learn more about how beer is made.
Yeah.
Learn about ingredients, just like we've been talking about. Barley, hops, yeast, and water, those are the four main ones. And during the tour, I'll show you all of those ingredients.
Oh, cool.
We have samples that will show you. Many people have not seen hops or seen a malted barley or seen what yeast looks like. And we have all those, all samples of those during the tour that you can take a look at and hold if you want.
Tuesday's is that 6 o'clock?
Tuesday's from 6 to 6:30.
Perfect.
Mm-hmm. Free tour.
Very good. And Thursday's the specialty release dinners or the beers released, and then you've got the food truck option, which is awesome. And and then the Beer and Barley Wine Festival this weekend in Anchorage, which I've been to a number of times. It's always a great time. So many different beers to try, not only Alaskan beers, but they bring in outside beers too, which is fun. And it's not a too expensive of a ticket, and it doesn't usually sell out, right? You can get tickets just at the door?
And depends.
Okay.
It fluctuates. I wouldn't take a chance.
Okay.
I wouldn't take a chance because they do get, sometimes they don't sell out quite, but then they'll sell out at the door.
Okay. All right. So
you want to be careful, especially if you're going from the valley into Anchorage.
Sure.
To plan ahead.
There you go. Okay. Well, any final thoughts or questions or comments? We'll have to have you on again sometime. Maybe after we've secured you some of those Alaska-grown hops, we'll have to have you on again to talk about an Alaska-grown beer.
Absolutely. Well, what we can talk about is yeast and water, because sometimes people, we always talk about hops and barley, which tend to be the most exciting ingredients, but yeast and water are the other two, and I think that's, a hot
pretty
topic.
Important components.
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, Stephen, thanks so much for joining us on this cold, dark morning, and cheers to Alaska Grown, or excuse me, I want to make everything Alaska Grown.
Sure.
Cheers Alaska to Alaska beer. Beer Week.
Thanks, Amy.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mike.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
So, Amy, that was wonderful. As is usual, Stephen has got great information, and it's good. We have a little less than a minute left.
Yeah.
How would you like to sum up any thoughts about next week?
Yeah, I actually do have next week scheduled. We're going to have one of the chairperson of the Alaska Food Policy Council is going to join us next week to talk about what is the Alaska Food Policy Council? What are they working on? Why do they exist, et cetera? So Liz from the Alaska Food Policy Council is going to join me. And I actually have all of February booked now as well. So I'm going to put some information out about who our guests will be throughout the month of February so people can get engaged.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Ag Matters.
Yep. Amy Pettit with Ag Matters finishing up another week, and we'll be back next week.